Taking a look now at Apple Computers and Accessories with Joe Rhodes. Larry Mueller here, and Joe is a self-employed Macintosh support specialist, works out of Madison. That works out of Macintosh. I was about to say, that's pretty good.
I work on a Macintosh.
He works inside Macintoshes sometimes, but not a lot. But I tell you what, he knows a lot about Apple computers and the accessories. And I hope you'll join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Joe, welcome back.
Glad to be here, Larry.
And Apple's looking pretty good these days, isn't it?
Yeah, we've had a lot of news in the Apple land here recently. The big exciting thing, of course, was Apple introduced new laptops. And Apple gets really excited about details, and it's pretty easy to see when you watch their stream about this. I mean, the Apple laptops, the MacBook and the MacBook Pro, have always been some of the thinnest. They're just really well put together. They really try and minimize the use of screws and have, you know, they just want the thing to be seamless. Well, they came up with this new manufacturing technique, and they are so proud of this. And I didn't really get it until I had one of these in my hand. But what they do now is they start with a chunk of aluminum and they carve the laptop out of the chunk. So the whole thing is one solid piece. It used to be that there was a frame and they put all the computer components inside of it and then they wrapped it in an aluminum shell. Now they start with a chunk of aluminum and they literally etch the entire laptop in it, so it's one solid piece, and then they put the electronics inside of it and put a cover on the back. The upshot here is there's no screw holes. There's a lot fewer parts. It's a lot stiffer. It's lighter. And it sounds, you know, almost, you know, Apple is the only company I know of that gets that excited about, you know, reducing the number of screws in their products. But when you hold the thing, it really does feel very, very solid, very, very rugged. It's very pleasant to have in your hands. And the idea is that, you know, something that's got this much more rigidity, well, it's going to last longer. I've personally gone through a couple of Apple laptops where I think they got bounced around too much in my backpack going through college. And eventually, you know, I would just twist it a little bit and all of a sudden the thing would freeze up on me. And I just got the feeling that, you know, I think some little solder got jostled loose. Well, hopefully that'll be less likely to happen. Their manufacturing technique now has a lot more recyclable parts in it and a lot fewer chemicals. And from the, okay, what do I get out of this standpoint, they've also made them considerably faster with the graphics department. So now even the entry-level MacBook now has much better graphics performance for playing games, doing things like Photoshop, or manipulating your photos in iPhoto, or working with movies in iMovie and things like that.
So lots of good things there. Let's go to Tom in Burlington. Tom, hello.
Well, I'm excited about that news. There's one thing about these laptops I just want, as an aside, I wish they would have a deal where you'd have the keyboard could be detached from the screen, so you wouldn't have to have them both together. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, make it a little more ergonomic. I think there's some people who have actually taken that approach where they have the screens that are flexible and they twist around. Apple's big thing lately seems to be how small can we make it, and I think that would add extra bulk. Their option is we're going to keep trying to make them small.
Right. My question was this. I'm trying to upload some video from a camera onto my computer.
Okay.
And it's in XP, and they say my 1394 port, it is not recognizing my 1394 port. Do you know anything about that might help me? Or
sure, I'll give it a shot. Now, did you say you're working with Windows XP?
Yeah, the XP, and it says here that if you've upgraded this this package, they have the security package number, service pack number 2.
Okay.
And your performance of your 1394 devices will decrease. And so then I went to, and you go into this edit, it's called reg edit, and then you click on this and click on that and get the right speed on there, but I'm still not getting it.
Okay, well, I'll take a shot at this, but let me just give a little caveat here that you're talking about Windows, and my expertise is really in the Mac land, but let me see if I can give you a hint. 1394 is the technical jargon for what Apple calls FireWire, and that's the connector that a lot of video cameras use, and it sounds like that's what your video camera uses to connect to your computer.
Yes.
So it sounds like you installed Windows Service Pack 2, and now it's giving you some warnings about, hey, I may not be able to work with this port properly, and it sounds like you can't get the camera to be seen on the computer.
Right.
My first thought is I would take a peek. I don't know if the FireWire or the 1394 port, if that was built into your computer or if it was a card that you were able to add. If it was a car that you were able to add, I would see if you can find the manufacturer's website and see if they have an updated driver. Because my hunch is that that driver isn't up to date. If it was, if it was built into the computer, so if you ordered a Dell or a Sony, Sony a lot of times have these ports built into them because Sony also helped author this standard. See if you can go to Sony's website or Dell's website or whomever and see if they might have an updated driver for this that will probably, because my hunch is you probably had an earlier version of Windows and their old driver doesn't work very well with Service Pack 2, and that's why it's giving you that warning.
Makes sense. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Tom. Appreciate it. Beth in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Beth.
Hello.
Hi, Beth.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have a concern regarding editing photos on iPhoto. I have a desktop and a laptop using the Leopard program.
Okay.
And I have found that if I have my screen tilted at any specific angles, back away from me, towards me, or straight, I get a different level of brightness and contrast, and I find this very unnerving when I'm trying to edit 200 photos to make sure saturation, et cetera, everything is perfect. And then if I should sit up straighter or tilt my screen, all of a sudden I realize, oh, my gosh, this looks a little bit faded or too high a contrast. What is the proper procedural steps to take when you are editing photos so all your variables are constant so that when you burn your DVD or CD, your images are going to look exactly like what you saw on your screen and you're not giving a faded version to somebody?
Sure, absolutely. The first question is, how old is your laptop? Is it fairly new?
The laptop's 3 years old and the desktop is 6 months.
Okay, because I know the older flat panel displays did have more trouble with it, where the further you would move, the more the color would shift. The newer ones aren't quite as bad. But it is kind of a curse of LCDs, is as you move, the color does shift. The best thing you can do is, they're designed to be looked straight on, basically with no degree of angle, which I'm guessing you're probably already doing. But the
and then a dark area, dark room, no outside light.
Reasonably dark, right. The problem is, though, even if you get it just perfect on your computer, it's still going to look different on other people's computers. And there's really no way around that unless you're doing some really high-end things with embedded color profiles. Mm-hmm. And that has to do with, and even just a difference between a Mac and a PC, the Mac has a setting, it's called Gamma, where the screen is basically just turned up a little bit brighter than it is on a PC. And a lot of times you will edit a photo on a Mac, and then you'll send it over to a PC and you'll look at it and like, wow, this looks really, really oversaturated. I brightened it up too much because you're used to seeing it on a brighter screen. And it's something that drives web developers nuts. And the short answer is you kind of have to play around with it and experiment and find out. There's no hard and fast rule for this.
But Apple told me I should hit the brightness button on my keyboard and make it extremely bright and then start editing. Is that the proper step or should I have my screen a little bit darker?
Well, it's one of those things you're really going to have to experiment and find out. There's, like I said, there's no hard and fast rule. The other thing is you might want to take a peek. Are most of these photos going to be going to PC users or mostly to Mac users?
I think the majority are PCs.
PC users. One thing you might want to do is in your system preferences,
mm-hmm.
There's an option there for display.
Right.
And you can calibrate your display. And one thing you might choose to do, there is, while you're calibrating it, one of the options is to set the gamma level. And there's two gamma levels. One is Mac standard and one is PC standard. You might want to choose to set that to the PC standard. And you'll see your screen gets a little darker when you do it. But that way, you're essentially looking at the screen the same way most PCs will. So when you're editing your photos, you're setting the brightness, it'll be most similar to what a PC would be displaying it as.
Okay, and then I should not touch that brightness button on my keyboard?
You can adjust that. You basically set the brightness so it is comfortable for you to look at given the ambient light. I mean, that's really the point of that brightness. If you're in a really bright room, you want to brighten the screen up as much as possible. If you're in a very dark room, you want to turn that down a little bit so it's not hurting your eyes. That's really what the brightness is supposed to do.
Okay, and then when you burn that disc and take it to a Ritz camera or wherever, do you say to them, please do not put your default settings on it so that they will not further alter the color that you've tweaked?
Right. As long as you can ask them, not to alter the settings on that. You can also ask them, okay, I edited these with a Mac standard gamma or a PC standard gamma, and that's how you have your screen set. And they might try to be helpful and say, oh, this came from a Mac user, so we'll do it on a Mac, and it'll suddenly have their Mac standard gamma. So If you're doing some really high-end professional stuff, you'd want to get into, and this is where I don't know quite as much about it, but Photoshop has a color correction mechanism where you can embed a color profile, where basically you embed in the picture details of how your computer displayed it.
Is that that Huey monitor?
What's that?
Is that the Huey monitor that you put on your screen?
I don't know, actually. I think that's one part of it. It's a whole system, but you basically embed a little bit of settings into the file. And then
Did you buy that from Apple?
I don't know. I don't think so, no. This is part of a program called Photoshop. And I think they're called ICC profiles. But they're like integrated color and correction or something to that effect. But basically, you embed into the picture settings about how your computer displayed it. When you put it on another computer that has different display settings, it can take your settings and interpret and try and get as closely as possible. So that's what you do with really high-end professional stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But those tools can get kind of pricey.
Good luck.
Thank you very much. Okay, yep. Bye-bye.
Bye. Appreciate the call. Gary in Chicago.
Gary. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Gary.
Before I get to my problem, I just wanted to I'm excited about the MacBook Pros myself because I'm operating with a desktop, the G5. But need to get a portable model, so the new MacBook Pros are looking very nice. But one comment, if you have any influence with Apple, since I'm getting older and my eyesight's going, the smaller screens and the smaller buttons are getting more difficult for me to operate, so I like the larger. But my problem is I've got a G5 operating Leopard, the latest Leopard with the updates, and a time capsule, and I didn't have any trouble with the initial backup of my system when I hooked up time capsule via an Ethernet cable.
Okay.
But I can no longer get continued backups with the direct Ethernet cable. I keep getting a message saying the file can't be mounted or the disk can't be mounted. And I've researched the Apple forums discussions and found out that this seems to be a pretty common problem occurring with a lot of Apple and Macintosh users. Any suggestions on how to get the continued backups that the time capsule is supposed to provide?
Yeah, the first thing I would do, and I unfortunately haven't purchased a time capsule yet because I just have one computer, so I just have my drive connected directly to it. So I haven't had a chance to put my hands in this a lot yet. But the first thing I would do is, can you see the drive from the time capsule? Can you, what's called mounting it, can you see it on your desktop if you choose to? And off the top of my head, I think it should show up in the sharing side of your Finder.
It does show up there.
Okay.
And I'm getting the green light on the time capsule.
Perfect.
Showing it's operating and connected properly.
Perfect.
And it starts, the backup starts going when I initiate the backup, and it runs for, 5 minutes or so, and then I will get an error message that the disk can't be mounted.
Okay. So the next thing I would try, if you can see the actual files on that time capsule in the Finder, there should be a folder that's, ends in .backup. And if you go in that folder, you should see a whole bunch of disk images, one of which will be the where you put all your files, your backup disk image. And I would try double-clicking on that and see if it will mount manually. It may be that somehow that disk image got corrupted, in which case your best bet is probably if there's no way to repair it, and you might be able to repair it using Apple's disk utility, but usually if it doesn't mount, it's kind of a bad sign. So
yeah,
one option is you could throw that away entirely and start over.
Okay.
And then you'll have to go through that first initial backup, which takes, a couple of hours.
Right.
But that might be one way to do it, is just try starting over and see if it's a little bit happier. Because once in a while, I've seen it. It's not as reliable as I wish it were, which is one of the reasons I just go with a direct connected one. But I think they're working on it. I think they're going to get those bugs worked out. But every once in a while, you get a one in there where you should have had a zero, and that just kind of fouls things up. So, worst case scenario is I would try wiping that out and try starting over.
All right.
Yeah, I was hoping to avoid that.
Yeah, I hear you.
Repair and wasn't able to do that. Did the permissions repair and all that, and unfortunately, it hadn't had very positive results. So yeah.
Now, this is just a dumb question, but did you try restarting the time capsule?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I just thought I'd try that one. We tend to forget that that's actually a computer. We think of it as just a device, but it's a computer sitting there too. So
yeah. No, I've done gone through the basic recommended procedures for trying to get this mounted and without much success. And
yeah, it sounds like that disk image got corrupt in one way or another, and maybe starting over would be the best way.
Okay.
There you go, Gary.
Well, sorry to not have better news, but good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call for you to join in, or you can email us with your question at talk@WPR.org. Talking computers today with Joe Rhodes, Apple computers, as a matter of fact. That's where we're zeroing in on today, the Apples. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking Apple computers today with Joe Rhodes, a self-employed Macintosh support specialist, works out of the Madison area. And Joe, you have you've got a website too for people to go to.
Yeah, I've got a blog going, although I haven't been as good about putting posts up there recently, but it's joerhodes.com/WPR. And I try to pick up conversations that we talk on the air and discuss them a little bit further. It's just lately my life has gotten sidetracked. The hockey season started, and that pretty much consumed all my free time.
All right. But it's joerhodes.com/WPR.
Correct.
All right. On to Steve in Madison. Steve, hi to you.
Hi, Steve.
Oh, hi, Larry and Joe. I had an iPod Touch question, but I can give you a little information on a time capsule. I have one, and I'm doing two machines backed up on it, and I had to really start all over. I spent days on the phone with AppleCare, and you basically, you know, had to dump the sparse bundle, they call it, and start all over. It took me 22 hours to back up one computer.
Oh,
yeah, and I'll
that
tell
was wireless. Next one I did was a direct cable, which went much faster.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say, if you're doing it via wireless, it can take a very long time because the wireless part is the slowest part there.
Right. But my iPod Touch question is, I just purchased it, and I use it mainly as a PDA for the calendar and the contacts and photos. But I'm trying to find a program that lets me do notes, but that I can sync the notes back to my desktop machine, and I haven't been able to find one.
Yeah, and this has been the biggest complaint of the notes function that was in the iPhone and the iPod Touch. It's like, why? There's notes on the Mac, and there's notes on the iPod Touch. Why don't they talk? I have not found an application for that. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I just haven't found it. Basically, because the notes I keep on my iPhone, they don't have to go anywhere as long as they're on my phone. The best I can suggest is searching the App Store, because I think they have a search function. You probably have a better luck doing this on your computer because you have a bigger screen to do it.
Right. Yeah, I've done that, and you get all the songs with the word notes in them. Unbelievable. Yeah, I tried that. But anyway, okay. I'll keep looking.
But I would search for notes and sync and see if that helps narrow down the field any. Because I would find it odd if somebody hasn't done this, but I don't know. It's really a glaring omission in this built-in functionality of the iPhone and the iPod Touch that they don't synchronize back and forth.
Right. Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Brandon in Milwaukee, we're on to you now. Hi, Brandon.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
So I have kind of an upgrade question. Right now I'm running I have a G4 PowerBook.
Okay.
But I definitely want a MacBook Pro, the 15-inch.
Okay.
My only concern is that since I know they upgraded the graphics processors and, you know, those are running pretty well, but the processor, you know, the CPU is essentially the same. And my question is, you know, would I be better off waiting a couple months for them to come out with one, or is this guy going to, you know, do the job pretty well for, you know, the foreseeable future?
Yeah, well, you know, that's a really good question, because I had that same thought. I'm like, you know, the processors don't seem to have changed much, so how much faster is this thing?
Yeah.
And it's a question on my mind, because the 17-inch has not changed yet. Apparently, they had some production problems or something, so the 17-inch is basically the same computer it was before, and the 15-inch is the new model, and they're saying in a couple months the 17-inch is now going to follow suit, but they just weren't ready. There are actually some tests on Macworld's website. If you go to macworld.com, they did a review of the 15-inch MacBook Pro, and interestingly enough, they actually do have in their chart of performance, how does this stack up against the old 15-inch MacBook, and how does it stack up against the last generation G4 PowerBook, which I'm assuming you'll be very familiar with.
Right.
So you'll be able to take a peek and just see, you know, yes, they actually did get more performance out of the processor. It's not leaps and bounds, but they definitely got some more performance out of it, because the processor is slightly different. You know, we've gotten so used to Intel cranking up the processors every couple of months, making them faster and faster and faster in the Pentium 4 days, and all of a sudden now it seems like they're stuck at the same speed. And the answer is Intel is making them faster. It's just the number stamped on the top of it doesn't make it seem like it's going faster. They're just making them more efficient for every go-round it goes through. So,
okay.
I mean, yeah, they did get a touch faster, and Intel is going to keep coming out with new chips, and Apple's going to keep upgrading them. But I think you're going to find the performance of these new MacBook Pros is going to be so far ahead of what you're used to. The chart I looked at showed it being 2 to 3 times faster, which is, you know, that's a huge step.
Huh.
That I think you'd be hard-pressed to go, gee, I wish I would have waited 6 more months.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, there you go, Brandon. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And we have Steve from Altoona emailed us, has a first edition MacBook Pro 15-inch, and recently the screen went to showing magenta stripes where white should be.
Mm.
The graphics card output to external monitor is okay, he said. Have you seen this or any idea what might be involved in repairing this?
I have heard of this. I haven't seen it myself, but it sounds most likely like one of the wires that goes up to the display may have gotten broken or corrupted or something like that. That's one of those things you're going to have to take into a repair facility and have it checked out. Because, yeah, it's like you said, that there's only one graphics chip in those.
Yeah.
And if it displays fine on an external monitor, it's almost certainly either the monitor itself or the wires going up to it.
Okay. So that's what it is. Alec in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Alec.
Good morning. This is a question about an installation problem of installing a new copy of 10.4 on an older G4 that I have. The G4 has twin 450 CPUs, currently has the 10.3.9, and I have a fresh 10.4 from Apple that I know it delivers installs correctly because I've installed it on other G4s that I have. When I start the installation procedure, however, on this, it just gets a little bit beyond the agreement part, and the screen dims and says I must restart the computer, which zeroes out the whole process and just puts me in that loop. So I'm wondering what that might be.
Yeah, you know, and the earlier G4s, they do have a little bit of trouble with 10.4 sometimes. The first thing I would try, and this is going to sound a little bizarre, but try booting into Mac OS 9 and run the software update and see if there are any firmware updates available for that. Because the G4 firmwares don't show up in Mac OS 10 that I'm aware of. I think you actually have to boot into Mac OS 9 to see if there's any available.
Okay.
So one possibility is you might have some outdated firmware, and 10.4 is having an issue with that.
Okay.
The other thing I would try is if you've got any peripheral cards in there, if you've added any cards to it, if you've got any second hard drives, anything like that, try and get the thing down to as stock as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing you might want to try is 10.4, I think, was a little less forgiving with memory. You might want to see if, you know, if you've added some third-party memory, maybe temporarily taking it out or playing around with those chips and see if maybe there's some combination there that's causing you this trouble.
Ah, that's a good suggestion. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Gary in Platteville, on to you now. Hi, Gary.
I'm a new Apple. I've got a new Apple, an Apple computer. But it's a G4. It's a used one. It was given to me. Unfortunately, it didn't come with a printer.
Okay.
It's running, I think, a 9.3. I'm not sure if there was a 9.3. But I've got all the software for a 9.0 operating system.
Okay.
Really, without a printer, it's not too usable. And I was wondering what my cheapest route would be to get a printer that works, because I went to the stores and it doesn't appear that any of the printers will take an operating system that's that low.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Gary, let me ask you this. When you look at the screen in the upper left-hand corner, there's an Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Apple multicolored or is it solid colored?
Oh, gosh, I'm not sure.
The reason I ask is there wasn't a Mac OS 9.3.
Okay.
There was Mac OS 9.2, which maybe was the latest
was
version of Mac OS 9, or there was Mac OS 10.2, 10.3, went up to 10.39, and I'm wondering if maybe there was you're mixing one of those two up. If it was multicolored Apple up in the corner, then you're running Mac OS 9.
Okay.
And the best bet there is you probably want to look around and find something used, but that's going to be tricky. I don't know if any of the printer manufacturers are going to support Mac OS 9 anymore.
Yeah, I've got two printers, but I think they're called peripheral plugs, and this one only has a USB port.
Yeah, you're going to have something that has a USB, and Honestly, I don't have anything off the top of my head. You're going to probably want to look around. This is going to require some investigation. I was going to say, you know, looking on the internet and things like that. You know, try Googling, you know, far, and then take a look on eBay and see if you can find something. But like I said, buying a used printer is always kind of a mixed bag because they got rid of it for some reason.
Yeah. The you know, it runs fine. It does internet fine and everything, but there's no printer, you know.
Yeah. So you're living in the paperless office already, aren't you?
Yeah.
Is it possible to get a plug that converts a USB port to a peripheral or anything like that?
There were devices that do that. The trouble with that is you have to have special drivers for them.
Oh, okay.
And you're going to be running into the same situation where I don't know if anyone's going to make a driver for it. Because that's really the trouble you're going to run into with a new printer is you find a new printer, it's going to be a USB printer, but they're not going to write a driver for Mac OS 9.
Oh, okay. To upgrade the system to a 10-point-something, this G4 from Alaska, it sounds like it will take a higher operating system. What should I look for on a computer so to find out if it'll even run that?
Well, the G4s, any of the G4s will run macOS 10.4.
Okay.
So you can go up to macOS 10.4. The trick is if you go to Apple's website and try and buy it, they're not going to have it. They're only going to sell you macOS 10.5.
Okay.
So if you need 10.4, you'd have to call them. They can sell it to you. They just don't have it on their webpage.
Okay.
Or if you can, you know, find a copy at a used store somewhere on eBay or something like that, you can buy a copy of it that way, too.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And on to Martha in Madison. Martha, hello to you.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Martha.
I have an iMac that runs on a 10.4 system.
Okay.
And I'm having trouble. I can access the internet, my internet in some ways, and I can get my email. But, for instance, this is an example. I went to charter.com, and then I went to try to check my email on charter.net, and the address bar, it goes partway blue, and then it stops, and it won't connect. And I've had this off-and-on problem with, like, if I go to TripAdvisor, sometimes I can get it, and sometimes it starts to load, and it never completes loading. Or sometimes it'll eventually complete loading maybe 5 minutes later, or it'll go to the Safari alert saying it can't
load the page.
Can't load it. So it loads some things, but not other sites.
Okay.
It's really weird.
So
why it does that.
The first thing I'm going to ask, it sounds like you're using a Charter internet connection, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And I'm assuming that you've probably been on the phone with them, and they said things are all fine and dandy?
Well, I haven't called them this time, because when I've called them in the past, they say as long as you're connected to the internet, it's Apple's problem. So they don't really give me much help. But I haven't tried this particular time.
Sure. And I'm assuming you've done the standard stuff, like tried restarting your cable modem, and they probably walked you through all that already.
Yes.
Okay. The next thing I would suggest, when you're having this trouble, try popping open a second browser window and see if other websites are giving you the same trouble. You know, go to Google, go to CNN, try a couple of big websites and see if they're running into the same issue.
I have done that with it seems to happen with just kind of a hit and miss. Like sometimes I can get TripAdvisor, sometimes I can't. Sometimes I can't even load the Apple Start page on the Safari.
Okay. It's kind of hard to say if this is a problem with your computer getting connected to the internet or if it's connected but it's just not behaving properly. One thing you might want to try is Safari keeps a cache of web pages you've looked at to try and keep things a little bit faster. And it's possible that maybe that cache is getting a little goofed up.
Okay.
So one thing you can do is to try emptying that cache. And the way you do that is if you open up a Finder window. Click on that little smiley guy down in your dock, and it'll open up a window that lets you see all the files you have on your computer.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, the Finder. Okay, I've got the Finder open. Okay.
Okay. And in the left-hand column, you should see a little picture of a house.
Yes.
Okay, and if you click on that house, you should see some very familiar folders. You should see desktop, library, music.
Right. Okay. Okay, I have that. Mm-hmm.
You go into the library folder.
Okay.
And inside the library folder is a folder called caches.
Okay, I see that. Okay. I opened that up.
You can pretty much throw everything in the caches folder away.
Oh, okay.
You can throw all the stuff inside of that folder away and then restart your computer.
Okay.
And that'll basically get rid of the cache files, and that'll start over. Now, some things will be a little bit slower the first time you open iCal or things like that, because it's those cache files kind of speed up the computer, but they'll all rebuild on their own.
Okay, so like my Yahoo Messenger, all that'll come back.
Correct. We're not throwing away anything of extreme importance. It's just, you know, stuff that is kind of scrolled away for make it a little bit easier for itself.
But now, how do I empty this cache?
You basically just highlight all that stuff and throw it in your trash can.
Okay, just highlight everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Everything
right.
in that folder. One other thing I would give a try, and this will help you determine if it is a internet connection trouble or if it is actually something with Safari, try downloading a second web browser. You can go to a website called getfirefox.com.
I have that.
Okay.
I have Firefox, and I have, you know, another thing that might give you, my husband has the newer, Mac,
mm-hmm.
and he's having the same trouble.
He's having the same trouble. Well, that,
yes.
that kind of disqualifies the fact that it's your computer.
Okay.
No. Now it's pointing more towards the cable modem having some sort of intermittent trouble.
Okay.
Because if it was just your Mac, I would say, yeah, you know, maybe there's something going on with your Mac. Maybe it's these caches. Goodness knows. But if you have two different computers that are both experiencing the same trouble, then it's more likely that it's the cable modem that's, like, intermittently cutting out.
Okay. So that is a Charter problem then.
Well, it's either a Charter problem or it could be the router. If you've got a router, because if you've got two computers, you must have a router to help them both be online at the same time.
Yeah, we have a wireless thing.
Yeah, and
yeah,
so it could also be the router or the wireless part. Are you both connected via wireless?
Yes.
One thing you might want to try, just for diagnostic purposes, is turn the wireless off on one of your computers and take a cable and connect it directly from the router to your computer.
Okay.
I know it's not terribly convenient, but it just for diagnostic purposes,
right.
See if that improves things. Because if
okay.
you get a big improvement there, then you know it's got to be the wireless link, and then you can start investigating the wireless part of it. Because then,
okay.
then it's not Charter, it's the wireless part between your wireless router and your computer.
Oh, mm-hmm. okay. I can do that.
I have an article on my blog that I haven't posted yet because I'm still editing it about
okay.
diagnosing network trouble, and I will try and finish that today and get it posted.
Oh, that would be great.
So... I get a lot of questions about that.
All right.
Good luck.
Good luck. Thanks a lot. And Joe's address there is Joe Rhodes, and Rhodes is R-H-O-D-E-S, joerhodes.com/WPR.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Jeannie in Sparta, we're on to you now. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. I'm going to try to sound like I know a little bit, which I really
I do too. Go.
I've taken the basic, this is how you turn it on classes
sure.
at a tech school, and that's where I am.
Okay.
I plan to be getting a laptop within the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the decisions I have to make is do I the Mac airport to make it wireless, or am I better to use the Charter connection? Does it make any difference?
Sure. Well, let me just clarify things, and maybe this will help some. Wireless internet. And there's two kinds of wireless internet, and I'm going to talk about the most common one. The less common one is it works like a cellular phone, where you have a little cellular thing that you plug in there. But what most people talk about when they're talking about wireless internet, it works a lot like a cordless phone.
Mm-hmm.
So just like a cordless phone, you have to have service that comes into your home somewhere. And
right.
this can either be through the cable company, through the phone company, doesn't matter. And then you plug in a wireless device like an airport base station or some other base station, just like you would a cordless phone. You plug it in to the wall, and then you have an extension. So the wireless part is really between the base station and that extension, just the same way in your computer. It's wireless between your computer and the base station. The base station still has to be plugged into something.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to get a laptop and you wanted to get wireless, the wireless mm-hmm. that most people are talking about, they want to be able to walk around their home, sit on their couch, maybe read an article in bed, go over to their desk, and they don't want to have to trail a wire around their house.
Right.
So you still have to have some sort of internet connection, be that through Charter, through AT&T,
right. It'll be through
TD.
Charter.
Okay. So you still have to have that. I don't know. The last time I checked, Charter doesn't bundle a wireless part included with it. Although that may have changed, but it used to be that all they would do is give you a cable modem, and on the backside of the cable modem was a connector for the computer cable, and that was it. And that's where they stopped supporting you. So if you wanted to have wireless, you would have to get a wireless router. AT&T, I know they will bundle those two devices together. They will bundle the modem and the wireless part into one piece. So they kind of, you know, mush the two pieces together so you only have one box on your desk. I don't know if Charter started doing that or not. So that's...
don't know.
I don't think they have. I think they just give you a cable modem and let you go pick up the wireless router part.
Okay. So then I might just as well go with the Apple.
You know, I probably would. It's going to be easier to set up. And if you have a little trouble, you can always go to the Apple store or, you know, call Apple support and say, hey, I'm having trouble getting my wireless network set up.
Which I probably will.
You'll make it,
Janine. They actually are going to come out and help me do this.
They are great.
Yeah, this is to the guys in La Crosse.
Oh, fantastic! Fantastic.
It sounds like they will do good things for me.
All right. Well, good luck.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. All right. Let's go to Cy in Cumberland. Cy, hi to you.
I'm fine. Thank you. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I heard a partial explanation earlier. I've got a G4. And the mouse arrow doesn't always work. Sometimes I get a square rectangle, sometimes nothing. I had heard the part where you open up operating system 9 and bring that up. What's the next step?
So you say you've got one of the arrow keys when you press it gives you a funny character?
No, the mouse key doesn't come at all, or else it comes up as a white rectangular square about an inch.
Oh, so when you press the button on the mouse,
yes,
it doesn't click anything, it does something else.
Yes.
Okay. Have you tried a different mouse?
No.
My first thought is that sounds like a mouse problem.
Okay.
Just a guess, what kind of, you said you have a G4?
Yes.
These mice, you could probably even borrow one from a friend. It doesn't matter. It can be even a PC mouse, as long as it has a USB connector, which are those kind of flat, rectangular-looking connectors.
Mm-hmm.
See if you can borrow a mouse from someone.
Okay.
And just plug it in and see if you have better results. If you have the same results, then we're, you know, dealing with a computer issue. But my first hunch is that sounds
probably
like
a mouse.
Okay. Mouse button, yeah.
I'll do that. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And mice are not that expensive either. Really.
No, you can buy them for I think $15 or $20 if you just want a cheap one.
Yeah,
yeah, and they don't have to be Mac specific either.
Well, Joe, it's always a pleasure. Lots of callers online yet, but we're out of time. But I appreciate having you back. You'll come back again. I
would love to. It's been a lot of fun.
And in the meantime, go to Joe's site, joerodes.com/WPR for Wisconsin Public Radio, and there's a nice little blog going there. Joe Rhodes from Madison, Macintosh Support Specialist, and he'll be back. We'll have him back in a month or so, and we'll talk with him once again. But time to take a look at climate and weather. Our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.